podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Here it is, folks. This is the moment. It's Archer to Gupto. 2-1. Gupto's going to push for two. They've got to go. It's got to throw. It's got to go to the keeper's end.
Go on, go on.
Yeah!
Well, that was the winning moment described by Ian Smith and celebrated by all the people in the videotape truck at the back of the Lord's ground there, where I was spending time trying to do the analysis. But we didn't need to do any analysis over the last 25 minutes or half an hour of that game, because it spoke for itself. The story was, you couldn't make it up, actually. It was fact stranger than fiction. How England managed to win that game, well, it was beyond me, really, how they managed to do it. But it was one of the most remarkable cricket stories I've ever experienced, actually.
Yeah. Well, you won't see a game like that again, I don't think. And I don't think anyone who's here today has seen anything quite like it. Astonishing. I agree. I actually feel quite sorry for New Zealand. They did not deserve to lose the match. It was really tough on them. There was that fluky moment in that final over when Ben Stokes dived to make his ground. The throw hit the end of his bat and went to the boundary for four. I've seen some people on social media say, oh, you know, lack of sportsmanship, or it's all wrong. I'm afraid that is just the laws of the game. It was just plain unlucky for New Zealand. But they would have, if it hadn't have gone for four, if it just hit the bat and stopped, just being two, then it would have been seven to win from two balls. England, they might have won it, who knows, but that gave them an enormous help.
Well, actually, I spoke to Marais Erasmus, one of the umpires out there, after the game, because there was a bit of a consultation about that moment, and he said the consultation was over whether they crossed or not, whether the batsman crossed or not.
Well, I think he meant by that was whether Stokes crossed from one side of the pitch to the other to try to get in the way of the throw, and of course, if he had done that, then he would have been out. But he didn't. He just went to one end. He stayed a true course, dived to make his ground. So it was not obstruction of the field. No, whatever.
And actually, to the great credit of the New Zealanders and obviously the English fans and everybody watching, there was no real qualms about that. I mean, you might say there's some question marks on social media, but certainly the players on the field,
they know
they
the
accepted
laws.
It.
Yeah, well, they know the laws, don't they? They know that it was just a moment of a massive good fortune
but
for England.
It was, because at that point, well, just before Stokes hit his six off that final over, it was 15 to win off four balls. And that's a totally hopeless equation. Yeah. But then, because of the six that Stokes managed to hit, which went over the boundary, and then the six of the overthrows, it was suddenly three off two balls. So it was an extraordinary change of circumstances.
Well, what about the nature of New Zealand's defeat? I mean, they lost because they hit fewer boundaries in the match. It's such an arbitrary way of deciding a game, isn't it? The only thing I would say about it is that both sides knew the laws or knew the regulations before they go into the game, before they went into the Super Over. So New Zealand knew they had to hit two off the last ball. It does seem an extremely arbitrary way, but then you could say, well, New Zealand only got into the semi-finals because they, you know, got through on net run rate, which seems like quite an arbitrary way, and is that particularly fair way of deciding teams who are level on points, you know, in the league stage of the World Cup? Yeah, I mean, you can argue about this forever and ever until the next World Cup starts, but I don't know. I mean, it's a fantastic day for England. Of course it was. And they got this four-year plan. They set out to try to win the World Cup with this sort of attacking, aggressive cricket. Not that it was like that today, mind you. And they ultimately achieved it. But they had a lot of good fortune today in achieving it.
No, it was an odd day's cricket, really, because there was no big sixes or even that many boundaries, actually. A pitch which demanded a little bit more respect from the batsmen and a lot of movement from the bowlers. And actually, I think England only hit some sixes with Stokes at the end there. They hadn't managed any before. Ironically, considering so much of their campaign over the last 4 years has been based on power and, you know, big booming sixes out of the park, and suddenly today it was much more about art and craft rather than just pure sort of machoism.
Was it a good pitch for a final, do you think? Was it a good pitch for a World Cup final?
Yeah, definitely. Well, look at the result of it. You know, look at the way it kept everybody on the edge of their seats right until the Super Over. And actually, one of the producers on the TV coverage said, with England needing about 70 to win, he said, oh, there could be a Super Over, and we all laughed. And of course, it came down to it. And ironically, so that's you now twice being involved on commentary with a game at the end of a tournament being decided on by a hair's breadth. So yeah. I'm talking about the tie
game,
you commentated on for Australia against South Africa in
99. Yeah, I'd completely forgotten that. I mean, at the time, it was the greatest one-day match I've ever seen, and it was until today. I mean, that was amazing as well. I mean, that was sort of on a technicality as well, that Australia went to the final. It was to do with what they'd achieved earlier in the group stage, and that put them through in the event of a tie. So you have to have something to settle. I remember there was a Champions Trophy in Sri Lanka in the early 2000s that was shared because both days cricket was rained off and they shared it. And we were talking afterwards up in the commentary box. Jeremy Coney was saying, you know, such an arbitrary way. Wouldn't it have been better actually if the World Cup had been shared? You know, the main match was a tie, the super over was a tie, and then it got decided on arbitrary number of boundaries in the match. That was the tiebreaker. Both sides knew it. Really, really tough for New Zealand. You know, a fantastic opportunity. They looked likely winners, I thought, for a really long time during England's innings. England just could not get going on this sort of sluggish, you know, difficult Lord's pitch.
I think it negated the power hitters, and I think actually that's good. That's sort of almost old-fashioned cricket. Look at the guy who had the best figures of the day, Colin de Grandhomme, 10 overs, 1 for 25, and actually, you know, he's a classic, what the New Zealanders like to call dribbly bowler.
But if you're watching at home, if you're watching at home today, was okay. If you were here, you know, it felt gripping. Of course it did. If you're watching at home, I don't know, it was a fantastic finish. If you're watching at home, do you want to be, you know, and it was on free-to-air, do you want to see Colin de Grandhomme bowl 10 overs, 1 for 25? What I'm saying is that riveting. You sort of have to be a connoisseur almost of the game to be riveted by that. You know, you do actually want balls going to the boundary. You do want balls disappearing over the rope as well. That would be my thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a brilliant occasion, helped by a stunning, unique finish to a big match. But was it gripping throughout the whole 100 overs? It probably wasn't. New Zealand's innings was like, it was about what are they going to get together, and it was all about then the chase. Could England deal with their attack on this pitch? And then it became gripping. So perhaps, you know, for 50 overs, it wasn't that an exciting match, but you could see exactly what New Zealand were trying to do. They'd worked it out. It's their method in this World Cup, and it nearly worked.
Well, anyway, whether it was the ideal pitch for a World Cup final, certainly the nation would have been gripped in that last half hour. And the guy who called it, as I said, was Ian Smith. And I talked to him afterwards about the whole experience of commentating in that sort of situation.
I thought India the other day at Old Trafford would probably be the peak of my powers. But to sit through that and yell through it, through the emotions of both sides, probably it'll never be repeated for me. I don't think I can go to that peak and finish in that trough ever again.
So that's 8 World Cups now, either as a player or commentator. And that, although you didn't win, that must be the highlight in a way.
Yeah, I think so. I think as a cricket fan, and I am a cricket fan, I'm not just a cricket commentator or a former player, I'm a fan of the game. You cannot get better than that. I mean, so many lives... so many young lives around the world should be influenced by that as a spectacle. There should be kids picking up cricket bats from every corner of the earth wanting to emulate the drama that we've just seen. And so from my point of view, I think that's the best part of it. Sure, I'm disappointed. Sure, I'm gutted from a New Zealand point of view. I feel sick in the stomach for the players. And I know what the reaction will be at home. They'll be well received. They'll be heroes. But it means not a lot if you've got nothing to show for it. And that they were so close. They could reach out and touch the World Cup. They could go within reach. I mean, there's so many little things you look at in the course of pretty much 8 hours of cricket, which is a long time, and you think they'll sit up there and how could I have saved one more run? What could I have done more differently? Fact of the matter, the whole picture is that as a team, they gave it absolutely everything they had and more.
And actually, there were so many sort of ridiculous things like that crazy overthrow, which I thought actually it was played in the most wonderful spirit. Two nations that really do respect each other. And There was no argument about that. I mean, it was unbelievably unlucky that it went off of Stokes' bat for four, but they just all accepted it, really. And Williamson, quite rightly, won player of the tournament, not only for his ability, but his dignity and just general kind of deportment.
Yeah, I'm particularly proud of Kane Williamson. I'm proud of the team, but I'm particularly proud of him as an individual. I think he's done a lot of great things in the last 7 weeks, not just on the field of play, but his demeanour. The standard he accepts that the team buy into has painted cricket in a really good light. You know, cricket has had its moments of despair, really, and ugliness from time to time, but there's nothing ugly about what Kane Williamson does for cricket. He's a master craftsman with a bat. Tactically, he grows every day, you know, and he went within an inch of, literally an inch, of being on top of the world, and now he's got a dream that hasn't been realised, and he has to think about restarting and trying again.
And you've had a dream. You've been able to commentate on the World Cup final with Creaky and Beaky. How's that been?
Well, it's been a battle now, and it's been particularly disappointing because they're Beaky and Creaky.
They've got one up.
They've got the bragging rights for the next 4 years at least. So, no, it's honestly, to be a commentator in this type of atmosphere, in this event, it's not a right, it's a privilege. And I thank the people that have given me that opportunity and put me in the chair at the crucial moments to be able to do it. So,
how long was that stint in the end?
It
was down on the rotor at sort of 41 overs, and it was about 2 hours.
Well, the last game in Old Trafford went for 2 days. That felt like three. that game felt like we've been here for 3 days. It was just phenomenal. I'm starting to lose my voice a bit. I need a bit of lubrication, and that's not far away, I promise you.
Well, we're at Lord's and just looking out as the players still doing their interviews about an hour and a half after players ended. And, of course, everybody's trying to grab a piece of every player. We've got a little chat with Liam Plunkett coming up in a minute. And I suppose looking back over England's four-year campaign, which, of course, started against New Zealand in 2015 at Edgbaston when they posted that 400 score. And actually, most of those players that played in that first or second game have remained, the selectors have remained faithful to them, and they are a pretty immense side, actually, aren't they? I mean, I thought today, particularly, fitness really showed through. And, you know, some people are a little dismissive of the fact they've got such an endless support staff, but those support staff actually do a huge amount of work behind the scenes. And someone like Phil Scott, the trainer, who just gets these guys up into the right shape to be able to play these long games. 100 overs of cricket is a long game, plus you've then got a super over as well. I mean, it really does test you. And Stokes by the end looked at I think he's going to need about a 2 month lie down after this.
Well, he can't have a 2 month lie down because the Ashes start in about 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is, and he's going to be absolutely vital for England in the Ashes. It's interesting you mentioned the fitness, because of course the person who threw the ball in, who was most under pressure on the final ball of the of this season, this year's World Cup, was Jason Roy, who's had that hamstring injury. He'd actually misfielded on one side of the ground. He was put to the other side of the ground under pressure again, and you know it wasn't a perfect throw to Josh Butler, but he got there, he picked it up, he got the ball in. So his fitness just about held for this tournament. And that's actually remarkable that you can go into a World Cup, pull a hamstring, come back before the end of it, and then affect what was, you know, the most crucial moment at the end. What about Jofra Archer? As a bowler, Simon, you played at Lord's, you bowled that nightmare over. Yeah. I know it still plagues you even now. He's Warwickshire in the late 80s and that final. What about Archer's final over?
Actually, although it's obviously not really, it's comparing apples with pears, but I also bowled a final over in a game here, the Benson and Hedges final, when it was 14 to win, so very similar to Archer's over with 15 to win. And I remember going for a six off the third ball, a bit like Archer did. And you suddenly think, oh, God, you know, this isn't going to be my day. But you sort of have to just focus. You have to think, I can somehow, if I can just produce a dot ball from somewhere, we might have a chance. And it got with exactly the same for me. It got down to five off three, then five off two. And then you start thinking, yeah, now it's my chance if I just hold my nerve. I mean, it's a huge task to be encumbered with. For Morgan to give him that
Would he have been your choice? Would he have been your choice?
Yeah, he would actually, because he's the fastest bowler. Well, he's actually Mark Wood is the fastest bowler, I suppose. But Archer, you feel, has got the most controlled speed, and he knows exactly where he's putting it. He's got those variations as well. He's got those bounces that the batsmen around the country just haven't been able to in the tournament haven't been able to pick up. So he's got sort of various things, and he just seemed to have that composure that generally I watched him now for 4 months bowling in all sorts of circumstances, and he just always seems very calm, very unflappable, almost sort of inhumanly so. So I think from that point of view, and the fact that he bowled excellent five overs at the death in the actual match as well, as we listen to people de-rigging the technical stuff here, I think he was the right choice, and obviously he just about held it together.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say he would have been my pick, and I said at the time he would have been my pick to bowl. When that six disappeared into the main stand, I wasn't quite so sure, but
Do you know what actually convinced me that he was the right pick was actually, funnily enough, his first ball in that super over was given as a wide,
yeah,
but it was 90 miles an hour and it was almost pinpoint accurate. Having not bowled for like 4 hours, he bowled an attempted wide Yorker, which was a perfect Yorker, which went over the line of the marker that delineates what is a wide. It didn't go past it, it just went over it, and unfortunately it was given as a wide. But I thought, actually at the time, you've got it together here, because you can produce a ball like that.
Yeah, well, he's had a magnificent World Cup. To think that people saying, oh, should he be picked or not, and it was supposedly in doubt. We dealt with this in our preview podcast. I always thought he was going to play, just sort of listening to those behind the scenes. I always thought he was going to play in this World Cup, be selected once he became available. What a future he's got ahead of him. But there are other...
Well, I just want to draw attention to a headline in today's newspaper. Archer poised to bowl New Zealand over. Who wrote that article?
I bet it was you.
Yes, funnily enough, it was. A big article I wrote about in the Sunday Times, where I said that in 2003, a very exciting young England bowler came to the fore in the World Cup. That, of course, was Jimmy Anderson, who bowled out Pakistan famously in Cape Town. And this World Cup, another very exciting young, raw, talented, fast bowler has come through for England. Maybe he can actually win the World Cup for England, which Jimmy never managed to do.
No.
And he has.
That's right. Jimmy played in 4 World Cups. But we talk about the young bowler. What about the veteran, Liam Plunkett? Today he's had an unbelievable World Cup. Since every game he's played, England have won.
Yes,
and
that's right.
Today another 3 wickets, and instrumental in England restricting New Zealand to 241 for 8.
And not only a great tournament for Liam Plunkett, but actually a great career as well, which has had various phases, from fast bowler to being dropped to all sorts of injuries to coming back as a different sort of bowler. And I caught up with him in the sort of celebration in the midst of all the melee outside on the outfield, just to ask him what it felt like to win the World Cup.
It's not sunk in yet, mate. I was speaking earlier this morning about at some point I wasn't picked in the team. Right or wrong, it is what it is in different conditions, but you're disappointed, you try not to show that, you're obviously upset inside, but like I know that I was in good rhythm, I knew it. I know that I'm not hitting 90 like I have done in the past, and I'm trying to, what can I work on, how can I come back into the team and still be effective, and obviously my cross-seam bowling is, I think I'm going to speak to you about it after the World Cup or whatever, we'll have a chat. The cross-seam bowling, it's just, I am just both cross-seam, I do mess around with the seam, and it's something I'm trying to learn as a craft. When we get a little bit older, you still got your skills, but mate, today is a different level. Speechless a bit.
Well, I guess it's something that it sort of, it feels like reward for all that hard work, and I think you're an unsung hero, really, because nobody really wants to bowl those overs in the middle. You don't get any glory, do you, really? You pick up the wickets, you go for a few runs. Quite often the figures are sort of 2 for 50 or something, which doesn't look special, but actually you've made a vital contribution. Does it feel like that?
Yeah, mate, absolutely. You know, like Morgs, Trev, all the guys in there, I think they know what role that is. If I can come in and get 2 big wickets in the middle, that's huge, isn't it? If you can pick up 1 or 2, like, Woody's coming and doing that job also. Now, the last 3 or 4 years, I felt like I have come in, I have picked up big wickets, because, you know, if you get them people batting towards the end, there's ammunition, the guys are in. like with our guys, if Morgs bats a way through or Giroy bats a way through, you're going to get damage at the end. I do pride myself on picking wickets up in the middle, and yeah, I mean, the guys appreciate what I did. I'm not after any accolades or nothing like that.
It must feel funny in a way. You know, you were a pace bowler, you still are a pace bowler, but you were a pace bowler 5 years ago who took wickets caught slip or caught short leg or whatever, and now you're getting wickets caught mid-on or caught square leg. It's a change of emphasis, which I mean must be quite a hard thing, quite a hard evolution, I suppose.
I think try and lose your ego a little bit, mate. As much as I love playing test cricket here, going around the wicket ball at 90 miles an hour, I'm not sure, like on my day sometimes I click in and it comes out like that, but I realise what can I work with today. Today I felt in good rhythm from the bottom end. I struggled from the top end, felt like I was sliding a little bit, but it's, as you said, you just try and hit the ball in the right area, mix up your seam a little bit and try and pick up them wickets. Morgan's been in class, mate. He's backed me all the way. He's not a captain to show emotion. If you go for runs, you go for your boundaries, he backs you to take a wicket. In any big situation, he's always backed me, Coley or Kane or whoever. He's always giving me the nod, say I want a wicket. Unfortunately for me, I've managed to pick up wickets in the middle, and it's obviously, yeah.
Well, you've made bowling cross seam into a bit of an art form, I think. And I watched your wickets today. Kane Williamson wicket was a cross seamer, but it actually pitched on the seam and moved away.
I think it is, mate. It's because if I do ball seam up, sometimes I try and ball too quick, I get an angle and it goes into the leg. So when I'm holding the cross seam and trying to ball quick, it actually comes across. The seam shows up a little bit and manages to hold its length. I spoke to Chris Silver and he was like, how do you do that? And I was like, honestly, mate, I try and timber around the seam. I manage to hold it a little bit. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, it's nice to get that. During Pakistan, he noticed it against Baba. There's like one that nipped away from cross seam. Yeah. And I try and smash the pitch cross seam. And I think first change, obviously the World Cup a little bit different, but playing cricket across the world, if you seam up in the middle, you're not going to get nothing out of it. It feels like you just got nothing sideways. I feel like I'm more chance of hitting the cross seam might skid a bit of bounce. And that's worked for me, mate.
Biggest day of your life?
100%. Not sunk in fully yet. I was emotional upstairs. The guys celebrating. It's been a long journey for me so far. And obviously, I feel like in a good place now. Top of my game, I feel like. So I'm excited to enjoy the celebration.
What was it like in the dressing room in that sort of run chase at the end there, the last couple of overs? What was that like?
For me, you know, I haven't spoken to the guys about it. It's went so quick. It's a bit surreal. But I feel like no one's going to leave it to anyone else. Everyone's to step out and do it, but they also know the person behind it can do it. It's not like you're going to leave it to someone else. Like, I can do the job. I'll try my best to do the job. Also, the few guys behind me can do the exact same thing. You know, everyone up there, management players, are backing you 100%.
14 years of professional cricket. Well done. Congratulations. That's all
Thanks,
I can
mate.
Really say.
Cheers,
Go
mate.
And enjoy it. So that's Liam Plunkett off to celebrate the amazing achievements of England today. And one little story that came out actually in the dressing room was I was trying to get the sense of what it was like, the tension, the drama in the dressing room. Phil Neal, who's been the manager of the team for the last God knows how long, two decades practically, former Worcestershire player, he's one of the sort of masterminds of the team atmosphere, and you know how superstitious cricketers are. So when matches are going to a conclusion or there's some kind of very strong partnership going, everyone sits in the same places or do the same things. And what Phil Neal has been doing is riding on the stationary bike in the dressing room or in the gym at the back of the dressing room or whatever, and he can't get off it if there's a partnership underway until that partnership is over.
So you've got to keep on riding.
So he said a couple of times he's been on when Roy and Bairstow have gone out to bat, and he's been riding for an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, good for fitness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good way of staying sort of, you know, in good nick.
So in this, apparently, during the Butler-Stokes partnership this afternoon, he was back on the stationary bike again for, you know, about, I don't know, 17, 18 overs or something. I think he's lost quite a bit of weight during this tournament.
I'm not surprised. So what about the tournament as a whole, then?
Well, we said, actually, last week, didn't we, has it been a great tournament? And I said, well, it hasn't, but it's had great moments. Mm. But this actually has made it into a great tournament in the end, because it's had a fitting climax with the outcome uncertain until the last, literally the last ball. Apart from a bit of crappy weather in the middle in Bristol, two of the best four
teams. Hold on. It also rained in Southampton as well. It wasn't just in Bristol.
Yeah, OK, fine. But anyway, I mean, thank God the rain didn't last today to sort of make a damp screw of the final. Yeah. So I think overall, Yeah, I think it's been a very good tournament. I wouldn't say great, because it just feels like a little bit too long, and that perhaps India probably deserved to be in the final as well, and they didn't play well against New Zealand. But apart from that, I think very good. What about you?
Yeah. Would we be saying the same thing if New Zealand had won? You know, it would have probably felt from an English perspective, you know, the hosts, it's so important, that four-year build-up, it felt like a bit of an anti-climax. But you'll never see a day like this again.
No.
New Zealand, well, they'll wish they'd never seen it, because it was utterly cruel on them.
Noticing one man walking away out there. An absolutely amazing few months it's been, traumatic few months it's been for him, Andrew Strauss
yeah,
with his two sons walking across the outfield. He was the guy, of course, who got this whole one-day ball rolling and put the emphasis on one-day cricket. He's had the absolutely tragic experience of losing his wife, Ruth, in December, after, you know, several months of this incurable lung disease, and has to bring up those two boys on his own. They are talented cricketers. In fact, he was telling me the other day he played his first game with his oldest, Sam, and made 27 or something. But I mean, he must be, that is at least some compensation. Well, you can't compensate for the loss of your wife, but it must give him at least a feel-good sensation today. He got that campaign going, and he's seen it come to fruition.
Yeah, because he had to give up his job because of the illness as well. Yes, he had to give up his job, which, because of Ruth's illness. So he's been working on the television commentary on the media side of it. But yeah, as he strolls across that outfield, he'll feel a real sense of satisfaction that he got this going.
And if you think about it, he was the guy that orchestrated England getting to number one in the world as a test team, as captain in 2011, and he has been the guy who's orchestrated England getting to number one in the world as a one-day team, and finally winning the World Cup.
Yeah.
So he, what you might call a master planner.
Yeah, well, you wonder whether he'll come back in at some point in the future.
I suppose, just to finish, really, it's been on national TV today, as well as, of course, on BBC. Lots of people would have tuned in that last hour and a half and thought, wow, cricket is quite a good sport, this, isn't it? I think it won't have quite the same dramatic effect on cricket that 2005, the Ashes, had, in the sense that that was a build-up over a long time.
Yeah, it was over many weeks.
And the narrative sort of kept unfolding,
yeah,
and it was a story that kept giving in a way. And still, cricket was very much part of the fabric of the sporting summer. It's become less so now, but this, I think, at least will cause a bit of a spike in the interest in the game, with the Ashes coming up later in the summer, and a sort of change in the whole format of cricket after this year.
Yeah. Well, I've hugely enjoyed the World Cup. It's been fantastic going around all the grounds and seeing all the different teams' support as well, and the different atmospheres at all the games. I think it's been, from my point of view, an excellent World Cup. I agree with the Ashes. The Ashes was that sort of intense week by week, or day by day excitement, wasn't it? Whereas the World Cup's had good highs and lows, so it's not been quite the same, but of course, massive high today, similar to the one at the Oval in 2005. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you have as well. We've enjoyed talking about it as well, and the ups and downs of the World Cup over the last 6.5 weeks. And there is no bigger high for the followers of England cricket than what's happened today.
No, I'm so pleased for the players and all their support staff, actually, because they put so much into this, and they've got the rewards, and they really deserve it. And I'm very, very proud of all of them.
But as you say, it's
on we go.
On we go. It's the Ashes. We've still got the Ashes to go this summer. Yeah. It feels like enough for one summer, this, doesn't it? But there's a bit more to come, folks.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And of course, we'll be bringing you each day of the Ashes as well after they start on August the 1st. Well, the sun's setting at Lords. What an amazing scene we've seen today. Actually, it's been a privilege to be here today. Well done to England, and congratulations to them. And a tremendous occasion was fittingly crowned by that final over.
And commiserations to New Zealand, because they played their part and they were desperate. Pretty unlucky. Hope you've enjoyed this podcast.
Yeah.
Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.